Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're tuned in to the evening edition. I'm Ezra Zayed. This is Outside the Lines, the show where we look at how colors influence our lives in unexpected ways. Now, the subject of today's show is something that is very close to each and every one of us. And in fact, it's the very thin barrier which separates us from one another, yet at the same time, helps us to understand our surroundings through the sense of touch. On the program, we're talking about skin. Think about all the ways that our skin is essential to us. Not only does it serve as a layer of protection, it also enables us to feel a variety of sensations and to communicate with one another through touch. But the color of skin, of this amazing organ that we have, has also been the basis for racial divide, discrimination, as well as agony for people living among communities which prize particular shades of skin. So today I'm speaking with an anthropologist about human skin. She's Dr. Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University. As a biological anthropologist, Nina studies the evolution of human beings and our close relatives in the animal kingdom. She's a celebrated author and researcher on the history of human skin and skin color and what it means to us in the modern world. Nina, could you share with us how you first became interested in studying human skin?
Human skin is a subject which in anthropology is tremendously understudied. Most anthropologists, when they're interested in human evolution, concentrate on bones and fossils, and they ignore the skin because it mostly is not preserved for many years. There's no fossil skin to study. And so this very important organ is mostly ignored. I decided that it was very important to study the skin and the evolution of human skin because skin is our biological and social interface with the world. It serves an important series of functions to protect us from all sorts of physical elements as well as microbes in our environment, and it's a very important organ for our social communication via touch and via its appearance. And so it is an ideal object of study for an anthropologist, and I've spent most of the last 30 years of my career studying the skin.
Now, humans are mammals, and yet we are largely fur-free as compared to our counterparts, for example, the apes, orangutans, monkeys, and so on. Why is this the case?
Yes, I think the first and most distinctive characteristic of human skin is that it is mostly naked. We lack fur like our primate relatives. And so many people are interested, and I've been interested in this, and we have done a lot of work, we and colleagues in many laboratories around the world have done a lot of work to try to figure out why we lost most of our body hair. This requires a lot of good detective work because, as I mentioned, we don't have direct fossil evidence of human skin. And so we need to look at the evidence of comparative anatomy and physiology, as well as look at the temperature records and environmental records from the ancient past where humans lived. We also look at the skeletal evidence of humans that lived in the past. What we can do by putting all this information together is figure out what people millions of years ago probably were doing. We know that our ancient ancestors about 3 and 2 million years ago lived in Africa, in hot equatorial parts of Africa.
Now, listeners, a little anthropological background might be helpful at this point. Anthropologists have found that all human beings who exist today can trace their ancestry back to African roots. In other words, human beings from the African continent dispersed to populate the world.
And that they were highly active, much more so in terms of sustained running activity than our close primate relatives, like chimpanzees and gorillas. And what we have inferred is that we lost most of our body hair because we didn't need the thermal protection. In fact, we needed to be able to liberate ourselves from excess body heat that we built up as we ran and walked fast in open environments. Humans, about 2 million years ago, were tall, capable runners and fast walkers, and they would have used their great locomotion skill in foraging, in running away from predators, and possibly also in hunting. And when they would be running in a hot environment, they would need to be able to keep cool. And the way that primates, including humans, keep cool is by sweating. So we have inferred that most of human hair was lost because of the need to cool the body through sweating. We evolved into the world's best sweaters. We have a very high density of eccrine sweat glands, and this allows the surface of our body to serve as a huge evaporative cooling surface when we're exercising vigorously in a hot place.
And so how did our skin evolve to give us the necessary protection, considering the fact that we're not covered in a layer of fur like our primate relatives?
Yes, the hairlessness was a great boost to our ability to keep cool, but it also meant that our skin became more vulnerable to the sun and to other factors in our environment because we no longer had protective fur, for instance, to protect us from abrasion. And so what we see is that the surface of human skin becomes highly specialized to be abrasion resistant and to be resistant to microbial attack. So we have special molecules in the surface of our skin that help to make it more resistant to abrasion, more resistant to water, and to microbes. And this is something that I'm very interested in. Humans evolved dark pigmentation in order to compensate for the loss of body hair. Hair protects against the sun and protects the skin from damage due to ultraviolet radiation from the sun. When we lost most of our body hair, we compensated by increasing the production of dark pigment in our skin. This dark pigment, called melanin, is highly protective against the destructive ultraviolet rays of the sun. And so we lost our hair, and about at the same time, this has been inferred from genetic studies, we gained permanent dark pigmentation to protect us using natural sunscreen from harsh ultraviolet radiation that can cause a variety of different kinds of damage.
I'm speaking with Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University. After this, we'll take a look at how humans evolved to have different shades of skin color. Stay tuned. It's Outside the Lines on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Now,
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Outside the Lines. I'm Ezra Zayed. This is the show where we look at how our lives are inspired by the colors that surround us. And today, we're taking a look at the topic of skin color with Dr. Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University and author of 2 acclaimed books called Skin, A Natural History and Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. Earlier, Nina explained to us how human beings evolved to become relatively fur-free and how skin became our layer of protection to shield us from various threats in our surroundings. And now, Nina explains how humans evolved to have a variety of shades of skin.
The evolution of the beautiful rainbow of human skin tones is one of the best examples of natural selection and evolution acting on the human body. For most of our history, as humans, part of the lineage of the genus Homo, we lived in Africa and we had darkly pigmented skin that was strongly protective against ultraviolet radiation. When populations left equatorial Africa and moved into East Asia and Southeast Asia, as well as into Europe, at times in the past, we underwent some loss of pigmentation. This was because it was important to actually lose protective sunscreen under milder conditions of ultraviolet radiation. Imagine that you have a tropical living person that all of a sudden goes to live at the latitude of, let's say, Berlin, or even a latitude like Shanghai in China. The ultraviolet radiation in those latitudes, those higher latitudes, is much lower than it is in equatorial Africa. This is important because the ultraviolet radiation, although mostly harmful, does have some beneficial UVB rays that contribute to the production of vitamin D in the skin. Humans need vitamin D, and we get most of our vitamin D when it is produced in the skin from ultraviolet B radiation. So, when we lived at the equator or near the equator, there was no problem. We got plenty of ultraviolet B radiation, but as soon as we started moving out of the tropics, there was much less UVB radiation, and what we see is active natural selection for loss of pigmentation. So we actually become depigmented or partly depigmented in order that our skin can continue to produce vitamin D so that we can stay healthy under reduced conditions of ultraviolet B radiation. And so this is the short story of how we evolved different shades of coloration. People who live very far away from the equator have very lightly pigmented or completely depigmented skin. People who live roughly halfway in between have skin that can tan, that can develop more melanin in the summer months when the UVB is high. But people who live at the equator have a lot of protective sunscreen in their skin that still allows them to produce plenty of vitamin D as long as they're outside. So skin pigmentation is really a perfect filter to allow a small amount of UV to enter the skin, but it filters out most of the harmful rays.
Nina, what you've just mentioned is, you know, that kind of knowledge that's really powerful in the face of racism. And how long has this been known among the scientific community?
Well, we have been working on this problem for over 25 years, and we published our first major paper in the year 2000, so about 17 years ago. And since then, this knowledge has been gradually getting more widespread throughout the world, throughout medical communities, and is becoming part of so-called textbook knowledge. But it still needs a lot of popularization within the general public, because there are many people around the world who think that skin color is produced by some other force, or is even produced by some supernatural force, that it's not a natural product, that it's associated with some divine miracle, or that it's associated with some other set of features or characteristics. What our work has shown is that skin pigmentation has evolved independently of other physical characteristics of the body, and that it has evolved strongly under natural selection. This is really important for people's concepts of health so that they can stay healthy, and it's really important for their deeper understanding of the social significance of skin color. You know that in Malaysia and elsewhere in the world, there are lots of misconceptions about the meaning of skin color, the meaning of light versus dark skin color. And so it's really important that people realize and that children receive education about the evolution of human skin color so they can see it as just a neutral trait, something that is as important to their bodies as their skeleton or their teeth. That's something that's not controversial. It's part of the body. It's part of the fact of our existence. And we should be proud and happy about our skin color, regardless of what it is. And we need to make sure that we protect our skin appropriately because it does so much for us.
So skin color is definitely one of the more prominent characteristics of a person when we meet them. But what about other physical differences that have been used to define race? So I'm thinking about the color of your eyes, your hair, or even hair textures. Do these differences feed in any way to that perspective that people might be made of essentially different elements?
Well, we know that there are differences between people in hair texture, hair color, and eye color. These are genetically based differences, and some of these differences may be attributable to the action of natural selection. But there are other factors that come into play, and this is where it's important to look at the history of human population size and movements, because as people have moved around the world through time, there haven't necessarily been millions of people. There were times in the past when populations were dispersing into new areas that were very small. These populations were tiny, sometimes in the hundreds of people. What happened under those conditions is we have what is called a genetic bottleneck, and this results in a great restriction of genetic variability. Many of the characteristics that typify people, let's say things like nose shape, ear shape, eyelid shape, eye color, hair texture, are subject to these population bottlenecks. In other words, if people moving into a new area lost the genes that were responsible for creating particular types of hair color or texture or particular eye colors, then they would be lost for good. Populations in this way lost genetic variation. For instance, in East Asia, we know that the variation that contribute to different eye colors, for instance, were lost in the ancestors of East Asian peoples. So we have only dark eye color in East and Southeast Asia. This is really interesting. And it's not due to natural selection per se, but to the loss of genetic variability due to population bottlenecks in the past. So my point is that many of the characteristics that distinguish populations from one another today are due to differences in the genetic composition of the founding populations. In other words, a lot of this is due to chance.
That's Dr. Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University. After the news, we'll be talking about how differences in skin color became a factor for discrimination and division among people. Stay tuned, it's Outside the Lines on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. I'm Ezra Zayed on Outside the Lines. My guest has been Dr. Nina Jablonski, biological anthropologist and researcher in the evolution of human skin and skin color. One of the most prominent aspects in her work is that she's strived to show through scientific investigation how skin color does not define whom each of us can become. Nina, could you explain to us how discrimination against darker skin first took place in the world?
Discrimination against people with darker skin is a really interesting phenomenon because we find it pretty much all over the world in agricultural societies. There has always been preference given to people who did not have to work outdoors. If you were of a privileged background, so that you could stay indoors or so that you did not have to labor in the fields outdoors, your skin would be lighter. And in all agricultural groups in East Asia, Southeast Asia, South Asia, Africa, Europe, everywhere, in all agricultural groups, there is tremendous preference given to people with lighter skin, who don't have to work outside by the sweat of their brow and the toil of their hands. So there has always been a preference for individuals, let's say for marriage partners, who have lightly pigmented skin because it signifies higher economic status. Now, this has become a much more serious problem worldwide in the last 300 years. Because of the consequences of slavery, of industrial-scale slavery that occurred as a result of the transatlantic slave trade, but also slavery within Africa and slavery of African people in Europe. Darkly pigmented African people became very devalued because their skin color, their dark skin color, was equated with slavery. Being black became synonymous with being enslaved or enslavable. And so we have two very powerful forces here moving to discriminate against dark people with darker skin today. One of these is a more universal force the one that I talked about in connection with agricultural societies and preference for lighter skin. The other force, which is more recent, has to do with the preference for lighter skin because dark skin meant the potential for enslavement or meant being a slave. So in the United States, for instance, even today, there is great preference for more lightly colored African American people because they are seen as being somehow better, socially preferred, because they have more options open to them socially. Many people consider them to be smarter, more highly motivated, even though there is no evidence to this effect. So my feeling, in fact, my studies show that we as modern people today must fight very hard against this discrimination against dark-skinned people. There is no difference in behavior, intelligence, or potential due to skin color. It is entirely independent. And the sooner that we can liberate ourselves from this idea of darkness being inferior, the better that we will be as a species.
So do you mean to say that people are not born with inherent differences, say, in their potential or values or cultural tendencies, and that these differences came with what they experienced after birth?
That's correct. We are not born with inherent differences in behavior and culture and temperament. These are differences that develop as we grow from infants to children to juveniles and adults in various cultures. And these characteristics are all highly changeable through our lifetime. So if we take a typical kid from Kuala Lumpur and bring them, let's say, to Chicago in a completely different environment, they will grow up like a typical kid in Chicago. They won't grow up like a typical kid would in Kuala Lumpur. We have complete flexibility in our development of temperament, behavior, and cultural traits, as well as language. So it's really important that we liberate ourselves from this idea that physical traits are associated with any behaviors or cultures.
Now, one of your current research topics with your colleagues is on the use of skin bleaching agents. And has the popularity of skin bleaching agents changed over the years, seeing that there's been an increasing rhetoric on celebrating your own skin? Or does the mentality of prizing lighter shades of skin color still hold strong in certain societies?
The motivations for skin bleaching and skin lightening vary from one part of the world to another. And in some areas, there is now greater acceptance of the skin that you are born with. Be proud and happy with the skin that you have. And this is great when people feel that they should protect and care for the skin that they have and not bleach it. But there are still many parts of the world, and here there are some parts of East Asia and South Asia, parts of Sub-Saharan Africa, and even parts of the Caribbean and North America that engage in systematic skin bleaching or skin lightening. And this is especially common in younger women who feel that they really need to have lighter skin in order to be considered as serious potential marriage partners or in order to improve their chances to have a good job or be favorably interviewed in another context. So in some parts of the world, light skin is still associated with social privilege and with getting the marriage partner who you desire. And so there is still a lot of pressure. Often, women, young women with less education think that they can compensate for having less education or less money by having lighter skin and being more desirable. So this is still an uphill battle in many parts of the world, and skin bleaching is still a problem that leads to, in many cases, chronic disease and disfigurement due to permanent damage to the skin, and also leads to psychological problems when women feel that they have to continue to bleach their skin in order to enjoy the same social status. So I hope that we can soon evolve into a society and a set of societies where we can accept people as they are, with their beautiful skin, and where we can help to educate people about how to care for their skin so it will be beautiful throughout their lifetimes.
I'm speaking with Dr. Nina Jablonski. She's a professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University. Stay tuned for the rest of our conversation. This is Outside the Lines on BFM 89.9.
Bigotry Free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition. You're listening to Outside the Lines with me, Ezra Zayed. And now, here's the rest of my conversation with acclaimed anthropologist Dr. Nina Jablonski. So, curiously, in contrast to certain communities who prize lighter skin, there seems to be a trend in certain Western societies of favoring bronze tan skin. What do we make of this?
Well, it is really a paradox that many people want to be lighter and some people want to be darker. And so the bronzed trend continues to be popular, again, mostly among young women who want to look healthy and have that healthy so-called sun-kissed look that indicates that they are, you know, extremely healthy and vibrant, and also that they have leisure time. The bronzed look connotes leisure, just like in ancient times, the absence of a tan would also connote leisure time and higher status. Since the early 20th century, the bronzed look has been associated with increased leisure time and the ability to spend time outdoors doing recreational activities, not working in the fields. And so the bronzed look continues to be popular today, even though it is associated with lots of problems for people with light skin. If you have mostly depigmented skin, your skin is very susceptible to serious damage from ultraviolet radiation. So if you engage in natural tanning under the sun, you can damage your skin in some very serious ways and possibly create damage leading to skin cancer. This is a serious problem. So now I'm engaged in a lot of research work that will help us to refine our messages about protecting our skin against the sun so that people can feel that they don't have to have the bronzed look in order to look healthy.
And in relation to what you've just mentioned, that lightly pigmented skin is more susceptible to damages from sun exposure, what do we make of the current situation where people of myriad skin colors live together in societies around the world?
This is a great question because it has effects on our health and our social interactions. First of all, when we think about social interactions between people, we need to recognize that our skin is part of our bodies, like our liver, like our bones, and that it is not related to other aspects of our behavior or temperament or character. And so skin color is a socially neutral trait. That's really important for people living together in cosmopolitan cities. From a health perspective, we have a more complex situation because we have to recognize that people with dark skin with more natural eumelanin sunscreen have to, in some cases, modify their behavior or modify their diet in order to compensate for the lack of vitamin D that is being or not being produced in their skin. For instance, if you are a typical office worker in Kuala Lumpur, you are spending most of your time indoors. So if you have light skin, or especially if you have dark skin, this is a real problem for your vitamin D levels. And it is especially a problem if you have dark skin, because when you go outside for a short lunch break or after you finish your work, you won't be able to make enough vitamin D in your skin. So you have to compensate through your diet or by taking a vitamin D supplement. So I think we have to simply be modern and up to date in our scientific approach to our skin's health and to our body's health, and recognize that the health of our bodies is mediated by our skin, and that we can't just be clever people. We have to be clever people who modify our behaviors and lifestyles in order to compensate for the color of our skin and our lifestyle, depending on where we are and what we're doing.
So, Nina, I guess, you know, from this conversation, the human skin has evolved in so many ways. Is our skin still in the process of change?
Well, our skin is changing insofar as most of us now are spending most time indoors. Think about it. Almost 70% of people worldwide live in cities, and they live indoors. And so we are challenging our skin much less through ultraviolet radiation. These changes are not evolutionary changes, but they are certainly changes in the appearance of our skin. The one major evolutionary change that is occurring is that because people are coming together from all parts of the world in major cosmopolitan centers, urban centers, think about cities in the UK, in Germany, even in China, where people from all backgrounds are coming together and having children together. We are making new combinations of genes, including skin pigmentation genes. And so we are creating new appearances of people due to the process called gene flow and genetic admixture. So this is an interesting evolutionary process that we are creating new mixtures as we move around and as we have children with people from distant ancestries.
And Nina, one last question for you. How would you describe your relationship with your own skin?
My own relationship with my skin is that I love my skin. I thank my skin every day for protecting me from the elements. I study my skin every day to see how it ages and how it behaves. I'm fascinated with my skin. And I also enjoy watching how it changes through time. I also enjoy decorating it with some cosmetics, not very much, but some. In other words, I enjoy all of the human attributes of my skin. The touch sensitivity, the fact that I can decorate it, the fact that it tells a lot about me. I love my skin.
That was Dr. Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at the Pennsylvania State University and author of the acclaimed books Skin and Natural History and Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. This episode was produced by Josie Liu. If you missed any part of this interview, you can download the podcast on our BFM app that's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. I'm Ezra Zayed on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card.
Next stop, Graham Street. And Brian in the khaki shorts. Your GNL energy bill went up 60% this month. Seems like you'd want to know. Stand clear of the closing doors.
So, meet Eno, the Capital One assistant that catches things that might look wrong, like increases to a recurring bill, then sends an alert to your phone and helps you fix it. Eno, another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details. Limitations apply.